Today on OCN Now, Facing Islam blogger Ralph Sidway speaks on Orthodoxy and Islam.
Ralph Sidway is with me today for another episode of Orthodoxy and Islam. Ralph, let's talk about this young woman, Miriam Ibrahim, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. Explain for us who she is and what's happening, because one day she's released, next day she's in. Help us, please.
Yeah, sure. And like everybody, you know, I think I'm watching this very closely and hoping that she and her husband Daniel and their two small children are released and able to leave Sudan safely and hopefully get to the United States. And she's a remarkable young woman and a good example of a faithful confessor who found herself in an extraordinary situation that she never would have anticipated. Basically, she and her husband were married in the Sudan. He is an American citizen, actually. She has a U.S. visa. But because Sudan is an Islamic country, because they hold to a strict interpretation of Sharia, they consider her to be an apostate because her father was a Muslim. And so all of his progeny would be Muslims. So they interpret that to mean that she's an apostate, and they arrested her and put her under a death sentence. Mm-hmm. She was supposed to be executed by hanging. At the time she was arrested, I think she was 8 months pregnant. And so in their kind of mercy, they might argue, they were going to allow her to give birth to her child and raise the child to the age of two to wean the child. And then before applying the execution punishment, they were going to then administer 100 lashes to her for an adultery punishment, because by marrying a Christian, when they consider her to be a Muslim, they consider her to also be guilty of adultery. Mm-hmm. So just an unbelievable situation. Mm-hmm. And it changes.
It changes daily. One minute we hear she's released. Next minute we hear she's arrested again. Apparently her husband and the children were at the airport ready to leave, and they were arrested again. And then this morning I heard they were released again.
Yes, and I think that's where it stands right now, that they appear to be released and kind of in somewhat of a safe haven. Mm-hmm. At the airport itself. There's actually a picture I just posted on my blog this morning from an article by Faith McDonald that was on Breitbart about how her attorneys were able to, with a great intervention on behalf of the United States Congress, there's actually a real bipartisan movement, which is very encouraging to see. But I think we think they're safe, and we think that we hope that they will be able to have secure and safe transport to the U.S. here very soon.
Let's pray for that. You know, even if she's cleared in the eyes of the state, I'm told that her Muslim relatives have made it clear that they will do an honor killing.
Yes.
Can you please give us some background on honor killings? What is that?
Yeah, it's a really, really dark side of a lot of, I think, tribal cultures, but I think it must be said that according to some very well-documented studies dating from about 2010 or so, it's actually Muslims who commit 91% of honor killings worldwide. And it's actually permitted in the Guide to Sunni Orthodox Islam by Al-Azhar University in Cairo, which is the most respected authority in Sunni Islam, that retaliation or punishment is obligatory, is not obligatory or not subject to retaliation, is a father or mother or immediate relatives for killing their offspring or their offspring's offspring. So it's, in other words, someone who kills his child in Islam is incurs no legal penalty, and you see this in Pakistan, Afghanistan, even the more westernized Muslim states If there's an honor killing, then they typically will get off with a very light sentence of maybe 6 months or so, if it's even proven guilty at all.
I always like to look at lessons learned from incidents that take place. This one clearly baffles the mind, but maybe you can see deeper than I can because of your knowledge. Are there lessons to be learned from this incident with this young woman?
Oh, I think, Father, that I would probably defer to your preaching of the gospel here, because to me that this is a living out before our very eyes of Christ's own words. You know, I have not come to bring peace, but a sword and a man's enemies shall be those of his own household. Mm. And I think we're seeing that in our day and age, and it's kind of, you know, being raised up into a very visible type of thing. And that's it's extremely difficult for those going through it, but it calls us who are safe and secure in the West to greater vigilance, to prayer, to intercession, and to make our voices heard to try to intercede on behalf of those who are being oppressed and persecuted.
And I know with the issues of Islam, many of the politicians on both sides of the aisle have tried to paint it as, well, some are extremists, some are not extremists. We can't take a brushstroke and say that all Muslims are this way.
Right.
But I think the question that a lot of people are beginning to ask is, okay, if Islam is not this, then what is it? And why aren't the peace-loving Muslims speaking up? I know they can't in those countries because they're persecuted. Some are crucified in their own villages, shot and killed before their families, to terrify them and to terrorize them. Okay, but what about the peace-loving Muslims? Why aren't they speaking up?
Yeah, that's. I think you hit the nail on the head. That we certainly see it in the Muslim countries. That you know, the voices for trying to reform Islam and take out of it all these violent passages out of the Quran and the life of Muhammad, and they themselves are being persecuted. They themselves are under death threats and are often killed. We just saw a recent situation of such in Pakistan. Here in America, much more difficult to figure out why it is that most Muslim groups seem intent on silencing those who raise these questions about Islam, rather than trying to advocate for some sort of a reform within Islam and to deal with these really truly kind of horrific aspects of it. Because really, I think what ends up happening is, it puts Islam above reproach, and Islam itself kind of creates this culture in which these things happen, and it's a whole kind of worldview that is propagated from generation to generation.
Well, I don't know who you talk to these days, but everyone I'm talking to, as soon as you mention Islam, their minds go to terrorists. Now, not all Muslims are terrorists. We know that.
Correct.
But what a lot of people are saying, okay, if you're not, then why aren't you speaking louder about those who are and who are clearly casting a negative, if I can even say black tone, in the sense of color tone, to what is transpiring? They don't even see gray. They certainly don't see white here, in the sense of clarity, nothing else, not in a bigoted way. Okay?
Sure, sure. I would also like to just add one last thing about Miriam Ibrahim before we go on. Before we wrap up this segment, that she actually was raised, her mother raised her, you know, her father was Muslim, but her mother is the one who raised her, and her mother was an Ethiopian Orthodox Christian. So there is that that real strong tie of faith between us and Miriam and her family. So when I learned that, I was very moved by that.
Thank you, Ralph.
You've been listening to OCN Now with Facing Islam blogger Ralph Sidway. This has been a production of the Orthodox Christian Network.